Let's begin. If you'll stand with me, we'll have a prayer and our pledge of allegiance. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this gathering to conduct county business, and we turn the meeting over to you and ask that your will, not ours, be done. Give us wisdom and guidance and direction and a community spirit. We just pray for our servicemen and women that you would guard and protect them, Lord, and ultimately bring them home safely. Thank you for the cooler weather and for the rain. Again, go with each of us as we leave this meeting and grant us safety throughout the day. For it's in the name of Jesus we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And the
not only is they only pay $8 by the Secretary of State, they are only mandated to go to the training, but that's not anything. They don't get paid for the training at all by the Secretary of State.
All right, item number two. Consider possibly approved minutes from the March 24th special meeting of Commissioners Court. That was our second meeting during the month of March.
Two of those minutes, I make a motion to approve those.
Okay, thank you. Motion by Commissioner Hinton, second by Commissioner Hockaday. All in favor of approval of the March 24th minutes, please say aye. Opposed? Item number three. Consider possibly approved minutes from the April 4th special meeting of the Commissioners Court. This was our primarily our workshop for CAPS insurance to discuss our county health insurance. We had a couple of other items tacked on there as well, approval of a county health officer. So I will ask for your wishes on approval of the minutes from that April 4th Friday meeting.
Does that make motion to approve minutes April 4th?
Motion by Commissioner Hinton, second by Commissioner Hockaday for the approval of the April 4 minutes. All in favor, say aye. Opposed? Item number four, status report on Tyus County pass-through projects. I've got about a six-page handout. There may be some extras over there if anybody would like. Contract administration will be the first topic that I'll hit on here regarding U.S. 271. We have several contractors still acting on the project. Certified payrolls have been received through mid-March. Pay to send copies of pay estimates through February 25th for TxDOT. Our second project has been 4,000 on the southeast side of town. We've got again James Construction, Southwest Environmental, and Jacob Construction will be our main operators out there. Certified payrolls, again, have been received through mid-March. James Construction has been paid through February 25th, and all of that information has been forwarded to TxDOT. Regarding engineering, it's the subject matter, 271, new change order number 12, we will deal with here in just a moment. The change order includes revisions for the U-turn. That's the only engineering work that's going on right now. Environmental. FM 4000, the Director of Environmental Services, conducted an audit and met with James Construction Group to discuss strategy for reducing sediment load. Southwest Environmental has been placing additional rock filter dams in their ditch lines to reduce velocity of sediment load. Seeding the mulch sod with a mixture of annual seed to serve as a cover crop and permanent seed to permanently stabilize the ditch lines as James Construction completes these ditch lines. On U.S. 271, again, our Director of Environmental Services drove through the 271 project and noted that in general the vegetation looks good, although there's some areas that may need some final touch-up and seeding. The Director of Environmental Services will be on site to conduct a follow-up audit during this week here, April 14th. Construction related, U.S. 271, $70,531,000 paid to date, 93.81%, 663 days on the original contract, 104 days added due to the bridge issue, bringing that total to 767 days of total contract time. 609 days have been charged, 77 days remain. With the exception of the traffic railing, bridge construction is complete on all bridges except for 2040. On the 2040 bridge, it starts the force work account on February 10th. Concrete deck and precast panels have been removed from spans 1, 2, 7, 8. Concrete beams have been taken down and stored. Bearing seats have been raised for all locations where the concrete beams sit. The contractor is currently in the process of removing the steel girders and raising the back wall at the northern abutment. Once the steel girders are removed, the contractor will pour the risers for those bearing seats. Once the concrete is cured, the steel girders will be reset and the bridge deck construction will resume. The
Contract has a demo crew scheduled to start this month on removing concrete pavement needs to be raised to align with the new bridge elevation. Current cost of the force account through April 6th is $767,000. The slip form paving crew is scheduled to return to the project at the end of April. Two concrete driveways will be constructed first near 2040. All remaining main lane paving to tie in the bridges will be placed following. They'll finish up with the remaining ramps at FM 127 and FM 899. The dirt crew has completed all the flex bay driveways and asphalt has been placed. Williams Brothers is scheduled to start pouring the remaining traffic rail next month. Treadway is pouring slope concrete riprap at the railroad and concrete aprons around all gate inlets. Texas Traffic Systems is currently installing lighting and conduit throughout. MICA is scheduled to return this month to continue installing small roadway signs, mainly on the south end. Lone Star Barrier is ready to install the remaining as soon as concrete rail is finished. Traffic control, we're waiting on the fabrication of the added small signs for the U-turn on the north end of the project. That will be the discussion of our change order. Once the signs are fabricated and received, the U-turn on the north end will be open to the traveling public. The traffic on US 271 on the north end of the project is now in its final position, up to 49. All traffic from County Road 2040 to the south end of the project is still on the new NDFR. FM 4000, 8,630,000 paid to date, which is 45%, 383 days total contract time, and 248 days to be charged, with 170 days remaining. Contractor has completed prep on the right-of-way throughout the project. The dirt crew continues to work on their excavation and embankment operation from Hart Creek to 271 Loop. Pipe crew has completed cross culverts from US 271 to 1735. They're placing driveway culverts throughout the project. Storm sewer is 95% complete. Bridge crew. Drill shafts, columns, caps, and abutments are completed at Hart Creek and all concrete girders are hung. Contractor has set all precast deck panels and is currently setting the overhang forms for deck placement. Contractor scheduled to pour their first three span section of next week. Drill shafts, columns, and caps are complete at the railroad, depending upon the progress of the retaining wall. The abutments number one and two might be placed in the air. Retaining wall is definitely the driving factor for the completion of this bridge. The retaining wall crew is setting retaining wall panels and cement stabilized sand. Four walls, one and two, on the west side of the railroad. They're scheduled to begin setting the retaining wall panels for walls three and four next week. Southwest Environmental continues to place rock filter dams and silt fences for the protection of creeks and wetlands. Traffic control. The permanent closure of Tennyson Road to improve traffic is still in effect, and all known utility relocations are complete. Any comments or questions for the commissioners? Anybody would like a copy of that? I've got a couple available over here on this table. Hold on. Anybody like one? You can have mine. I can print some in from the. All right, item number five, steel loop related, considered possibly approved for change order number 12, related to the addition of the U-turn for TxDOT's request at the north end of 271. Total cost, $68,315.86. If you will recall, this is a significant change up at the north end between El Chico and Goodwill. TxDOT apparently did not like the way that north end turned out and decided that it would be important and productive to have a U-turn located at approximately that point. And this will enable traffic that comes out of, let's say, IHOP, Del Chico, Hampton Inn, Motel 6, and they want to head south. Instead of having to head north and go out past Lowe before they can make a turnaround, having a U-turn there, again, approximately at the Del Chico driveway and the Goodwill, where any traffic there can make, get into left lane, make a U-turn, and head back south. I personally think that was a good addition. Otherwise, there would have been a solid barrier wall all the way from, say, Western Sisland all the way up to the bridge. And anyone that had attempted to make a U-turn there as they were approaching the bridge of Interstate 30, that posed a significant danger for anyone that might try to slip in a U-turn there. It would have definitely been attempted because people don't want to have to continue to drive out past Interstate 30 all the way past Lowe's before they can safely make a U-turn. And so they have designed what I think will be a very workable scenario there to enable traffic to get out of there and not get so far north before they turn back south. So again, we have discussed this, and this was TxDOT's request. We have complied with that, and the cost will be $68,315. Let me read a little bit of the detail on here. A description of changes, and this is a Williams Brothers construction project here to make this change. Add a U-turn at the north end per TxDOT request, remove barrier at north and south ends, temporary traffic control plan for the north end revisions, add flashing yellow arrow to the Highway 49 signal, add a red arrow section to Interstate 30 signal heads, add light poles using recycled poles, surplus anchor bolts for 48 feet of mast arm poles, and repair a crash cushion attenuator that was damaged by the traveling public. And last item, apparently we had an automobile that messed up the crash cushion attenuator and needs to be replaced as well. That's all I can tell you about it.
What you said about making the U-turn at the red light, they're already doing that down there. It's pretty dangerous there. You're coming out, turning around, and hitting that traffic, yeah. So that's... We need a motion on that. I make a motion we go ahead with the change order and make the U-turn.
Motion by Commissioner Hockaday to approve change order 12 and second by Commissioner Fields. Any further discussion or questions on this? I'll call a vote. All in favor of change order number 12, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Item number 6, considering possibly approved renovation and remodel of the Radcliffe Building to accommodate the tax collector and elections administrator offices. This is a project we've been talking about for quite some time. It would be the second major remodel project under discussion. The first one having been the remodel of the annex to accommodate adult probation. So this again is a rework of the Rapids Building that will enable us to run two of our departments out of there. Chris Batchel, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Good morning. I'm giving you several things in your packet there. The first two sheets are just kind of a recap of the whole project, just to kind of show you the process and where we are. The grayed out items are the completed items. The black items are the things in progress, and the blue items are our future potential projects that go along with the plan. In relation to the Radcliffe Building, y'all made the decision later, to wait on the Radcliffe Building until the election process was over with. We're still on that path. We were still trying to get everything ready to go, so as soon as the election was over, we could start, you know, moving in construction. One of the things that has changed from what I previously told you is the Cadell building, or Janine Cadell, the building that was 2 foot, we thought was 2 foot lower, it's actually 3.5 foot lower. It's not being used right now. We don't need it for adult probation. We figured out a way to put it in the existing space over there, adult probation, and that's already approved, and we're working that. So that space is available. It was still gutted. What's over there right now is a gutted building with no particular use right now. So one of the things that we put in there was the storage that was going to be needed for elections administration. And so there's going to have to be some renovation of that to be able to do it. Before we can actually do anything in the Ratliff building, they're going to have to move out. You know, we looked at the Ratliff building being two phases. After the elections, taking the area where all the voting goes, clean all that out, renovate that for Leonard's office and the elections administration staff. And then after they move over from the north side to the south side, then we renovate the north side for the tax and vehicle registration. There is a potential change here, and an alternate suggestion that I got is we went ahead and renovated the Fidel building, that's the one that's lower, renovated for the storage for Leonard, and also go ahead and finish it out for a couple of offices. Then I would recommend that y'all consider moving Leonard Mem all the way over and just out completely, and then the Ratliff building could be done in one phase. It would save about 2 months of construction time. And would allow them to move once and get everything out and move back after the renovation was done. It's an encouragement additional cost to do that, but we had to do some cost anyway to make a storage space for Leonard. And that was still up in the air from the last time we talked. We were going to put it in the law library. This would actually be, what I'm recommending here is it actually go in the Cadell building. We put an 8-foot roll-up door so it's stuck it rolling right off the sidewalk into the building. And that would be permanent storage for him. And for that function there. The optional part is developing the other half of that building. It's about 1,340 square feet over there. Half of it would be for storage for elections administration. The other half could be vacant or it could be renovated for offices that be temporary offices for the elections administration. After their renovation and the wrap-up was done, then they would be available for lease or for county offices in the future. It's kind of y'all's call on that one. I also went forward that the cost of renovating the Ratliff is about $67,000 on the high end. If we just did the storage area, it'd be about $25,000. The biggest cost of that is there could be a bathroom in there. We put offices in there. We'd have to put a bathroom in there. There is the plumbing because we took a bathroom out in demolition that was way out of code, but we could put back a code-compliant ADA bathroom in that space. If y'all want to do that, then it'd be available for future use by the county or in some fashion there. And that cost breakdown is provided in there along with the layout for the Fidel building. The other portion here is the renovation of the Ratliff building. And you see the drawing there that's a little bit different from what you saw before, not much. The biggest change was we moved the break room so that we can preserve the existing break room. The existing break room that's over there in the election administration is really small. It's about 7 foot by 12 foot. We're doubling it. So it's big enough now for not only elections administration, but for the tax office and vehicle registration. We'll save a little money by reusing the plumbing that's already there in that wall, rather than having to move it down to the other end. We are adding another stall. For the women, because there'll be a lot more women in the Ratliff building once the tax office and vehicle registration is over there. Even though code allows that the two bathrooms that are there are sufficient, it's easy enough because of the way this thing is built to add on another stall, so there's more convenience in that capacity for the ladies over there. The other thing that would happen on the tax and vehicle registration is I've been working with the ladies in tax and vehicle registration about their what I call their workstations. They're really tight where they are now. So what we're doing is we're planning on designing right now an actual layout for one of the workstations. I'm going to run it by them. We're going to talk about where the drawers go, how much counter they got, and how they work, everything. We're going to actually build, my plan is to actually build one, bring it over, and play with it, make any final changes on it, and we build nine of them. Actually would be portable and actually brought into the building. So it won't be buying any furniture, but just to make sure that the mill works, the building, those things that they've got right now work. What they've got over right now has been kind of piecemealed together, and they're really tight on space. So we've been working with them on trying to get something that's going to work a lot better, then give them a little bit more space so they can move around and do that. If you remember from earlier discussions, the entry area for the tax office and vehicle registration is also sized and set up so that during the election day, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party would actually have separate meeting rooms in the lobby area of the vehicle registration and the tax office. So it's multi-purpose on that panel. The original estimate for the budget estimate we did earlier for the rapid building was $170,000. We're at about, the estimates you see here right now is about $185,000. The difference being is when we did the budget estimate, we added the additional stall. I'm going to add a trellis or something that really highlights the entry, because I don't want them coming in the back door on this building. They need to come in on the side of Madison and come in that door to get the tax and vehicle registration. So there'll be some structure there, something on the outside. We don't want to actually touch the building, because when we did the asbestos survey, the whole underside of the Rapid building has got asbestos in it, and it's fine as long as we don't touch it. We start messing with the actual facade, and I've got to do some more asbestos abatement on there. I don't see any need to touch it. I think we can do something that will actually guide us in front. And then the other thing that was added, we added another additional workstation. We originally had 8 workstations. Talking to Judy, they need 9 now. We need an extra one. So we've got an extra workstation in there. So that bumped the cost up about $14,000, $15,000, over $170,000 that we originally estimated.
Okay, why is it important to get them to come in on the Madison side? That may be difficult to do. People are going to park over there.
Handicap accessibility is better. Parking to the north of it in that whole parking lot. The way that the actual building is drawn, you know, that planter bed, you know, we talked at one point about doing a drive-through. The problem with the drive-through is there's about an 18-inch difference in grade between where the drive is and where the building is. So if you're coming on the south side, handicap access is immediate. But coming to the back side, I've got to move some more ramps. I've got to be able to get into the building. And it's a lot harder with all those grade changes and your steps and the ramps that there now is not legal. So we'd have to tear all that out. We'd have to do a whole lot of more work on the outside if they come in on the west side versus the east side. So if they come in off of Madison, it's a simple solution. Less expensive.
You're going to eliminate the handicap ramps and rails back there on the west side?
I won't touch them, but they're not legal ramps by code. They're not legal, but they still work because people make them work. But if we make the main entrance on the Madison side, we don't need the ramps because it's all upgraded. So we'll make that the west side of the main entry for tax and vehicle registration. And that works better the way the layout is too, because when they come in the door, they come in right by the vehicle registration and the tax office.
But they still can come in from the west side.
Yes.
From the
west side. We're not doing anything on the west side or on the outside. The thing in the door stays the same.
Going back to that Cadell building,
okay.
That's quite a bit of money to spend on an area that we don't really know what long-term we're going to do with it.
I would agree. Again, it's off as an option. We do need to do something for the storage area, and the storage area is still got air conditioning. It's just still got air conditioning. So we could eliminate the whole left side system and leave it in its current nature. That would cut the cost down less than half. So. Again, I just offered it as an option, because then it would finish out the space and make it usable for somebody else. And if you don't do that now, at any time in the future, somebody will have to come in and it'll still have to be finished out. Because we took everything down, got all the old stuff out of there right now. So there's no power, there's no air conditioning, and there's no water except for hookups that are in there right now. So it's a completely vacant building right now. It's just a shell. So we can the minimum we do is do the election storage area, which is the right half of that, and not do a bathroom. We still have to put an air conditioning in, and we've got one more unit.
So you've got to put a 14 in over there to cool this place.
No. We have a third unit. We have three kind of units that we took out in a demolition. We're planning on using two for adult probation. We still have another one. I don't know its condition. It looks like it's still working. It's working when we took it out. It is a lot older than the other two. So, I mean, the plan would be to go ahead and use that third one, just realizing that it may not last long because it's a lot older unit.
You have to air condition storage, right?
Why? Well, isn't that where letters, electronic equipment's going to be?
Yes. Yeah, I asked that same question. You have any other?
And that's just a big open room there, what, a drop ceiling, or what does that look like?
Right now, the ceiling is probably 15, 16, there is no ceiling in it right now. We took it all the way up to the rafters that are in there right now, so there is no ceiling. You wouldn't have to drop a ceiling in there, it's just storage. Other than we're trying to keep the air conditioning, but in storage, the air conditioning doesn't have to be the same standards for human comfort. It just needs to be able to protect the equipment.
So you need to put a ceiling in?
Not necessarily. I'd say we can air condition it with a higher ceiling. We just don't have to, we don't have to heat it and cool it the same thing you would for a human. Boxes don't require as much.
Wouldn't it be a lot more efficient if we put a...
It would, and it's not that much. It costs about $2,000 for drop ceiling, so it's not a significant cost.
So, 185 plus if we didn't finish out that storage space for the other half of the Cadell building, we could leave that building somewhat, leave that space somewhat unfinished.
Right.
Complete the storage space 25 by 25 and reduce that 70 down to about
67. 67 and go down to about 25 or less.
Right now, I don't know what that additional space could be. I know that when we talked about an idea about Sheriff possibly putting some personnel over there, I don't know how that would work, but you know, with him having the personnel away from the main sheriff's office, that's an option. Okay, any questions, comments? I again ask you to take some time on this. Perhaps we could vote on it at the next meeting, but I know you've had some time to think about this, but these changes that have been made. Motion by Commissioner Hinton to table this decision on the Radford building. Second by Commissioner Riddle, all in favor of tabling this matter, say aye.
Aye.
All right, while you've got Chris here, do you have any questions for him, any comments about this?
My question is, we're full strength on rebuilding the adult probation. Now,
we voted for that. I don't really know on that, but we did vote on that.
The bid will be in the paper Wednesday, 7th or 2. I've also got the contractors, local contractors list, and I'm still adding two. And I'll be actually sending out request for proposals directly by mail to all the local contractors, in addition to what we've been doing. I suspect that we'll have bids in by the end of the month and actually start building walls and stuff by the end of the month. First step would be bringing it all in.
And without doing the work at the Radford building, we can still have adult probation over there, and we can still have Judy Cook's operation there as well. That project doesn't force the Radford project, but it does continue the idea of security, which is where this all began.
Right.
Getting those public functions out of the district court area and into a more neutral area, freeing up the annex to be strictly related to district court matters. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate your time.
number seven, consider possibly approved issuing an invitation for bids or a request for proposal for the property and casualty workers' comp insurance consultant. This has been handled, at least most of it had been handled by Mr. Preston. He was not doing the work comp consulting, but we later added that task on to him. So 3 years ago was his last time that he provided consulting services for us and making choices on our property casualty work comp insurance. He has notified us of his retirement, and so we are left with the need for some guidance, I think, on making choices related to purchasing insurance. This has nothing to do with health insurance. This is going to be essentially all other insurance. Insurance on our buildings, vehicles, workers' compensation. And we could go a couple of different ways with this. We could simply bid this out and go with low bid, or you can do a request for a proposal where it's not strictly contingent upon money. I think that there's any number of local insurance folks that could give us some, you know, good guidance on making these type of insurance purchases. So I don't think we have to go out of town to get some good bids.
Why do we have to have a consultant? These insurance companies will give us proposals on that without a consultant.
They certainly will. They certainly will. I don't have the necessary technical skills to know what's best. It's a little over my head. That is one option. You can certainly listen. You can certainly bring in proposals from the person who's trying to sell you the insurance and make that premium. That is definitely one possibility. What do we pay, Mr. Preston? Do you remember?
I think it's $1,500.
It's like $2,000 maybe by the time we add it on the work comp. And we've been doing this every 3 years, as I recall.
That's right.
So it's not a real expensive service, but again, if you get presentations solely from the person who it is in their best interest to sell you that insurance policy, I do personally like the idea of getting somebody that's not going to receive any kind of compensation in the form of a premium based on the sale of the policy, but instead somebody that represents only our interests.
Over 8, 9, 10 years, we've been using it, and we save us more money than we spent paying increased services.
Well, I don't know much about what the history was there on why we ended up joining with a consultant, but you know, we certainly are utilizing the consulting efforts of CAPS, for example, on our health insurance. This may not be quite as detailed, but there again, I don't know that we have anybody in-house that has this kind of expertise. Carl, you got any comments on the services with Mr. Preston, whether or not it's a good use of our money?
Well, I mean, we decided to do this, like Thomas said, probably 8 or 9 years ago. We always get bids on our insurance, and there wasn't anybody on the court. And I certainly didn't feel like I was insurance educated enough to be able to take those different bids and determine if this one's equal to this one or what's different between this one and that one. I mean, there's some things that were pretty obvious, but not everything was obvious. And so we just felt like, you know, for the price, it was worth having somebody that was not bidding on the insurance at all and was just going to be representing the commissioner's court, the county, to look at it and tell us. Because he was an insurance person, you know, this is what this one does, and this is what this fee does, and then y'all can decide which one you want to pick. So, I mean, certainly if anybody feels like on the court that we can do that ourselves, well, you'll save a little bit of money. It's not a lot of money, but it's a little bit of money. But Mr. Preston's always done us a good job. I think we got our money's worth out of him when he was here.
I understand hiring consultants to guide you along. Nothing wrong with that problem. But to get these consultants that you issue a check to every month, let me manage your insurance, is not a real wise guy. We should probably check with the city of Mount Pleasant. They save $2,000 or $3,000 a year on their health insurance, and they don't have a consultant. And we should talk to them, see how they do it. I'm sure they have a capacity about that. I wonder how they do it also. I'd like to know.
That's a possibility, but in Mr. Preston's case, we don't pay him monthly. We just pay him annually.
It's just a flat fee up front.
Yeah.
It's roughly $1,500, $2,000. We just pay him every 3 years, don't we?
Right.
You know.
Right.
That's the gadget that I'm talking about, health insurance.
We're talking about property and casualty insurance.
I understand. I didn't know what I'm talking about. One time deal, not a monthly payment, right?
No.
Well, Mr. Aaron is here from the city. Might y'all use any kind of service like we're talking about?
Health insurance, we do use consultants. We do use consultants.
What about your property casualty?
Property, we're going through the TML school. That was talking it.
You just automatically use them each year?
Okay.
So you don't even consider other options? And we do use Texas Association of Counties for our work comp, not just because, but because they've produced the best price for us in the past.
Right. So I mean, we could do what? That tells you what the city does. We could go through Texas Association of Counties and get all of our insurance and not bid it out. Y'all aren't bidding yours out, right?
Yeah, you remember about Texas Association of Counties, when you built all of them together, it was a little bit higher, and everything would be workers' comp.
Well, I think they always give us a bid, but I think they always give us a bid, so Mr. Preston.
Yeah, they always give us a bid, but theirs is always a little bit higher, except for the workers' comp.
But you would save the money on consultant if you just went with that.
Basically, we're looking for consultant because the Texas Association of County on our bid out to them, they used to have it. And then their price, we let Bill do this, back just to be there and look at the different option, and he understands the insurance and come back to the recommendation, and he saved, I think he saved more money than we saved from Texas Association of County. We're going to end up paying more than what we paid him as a consultant. And tell you, you got a person, that's what they do. They're not much. They're going to look at it, get the best buy they can. I think it's money well spent to have a consultant. Not always, but in this case, I think the insurance is something we need somebody to look on our behalf to tell us this is better because of this, or this is not as good because of this. I think it's good enough.
Judge, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to approve the issue of the invitation. We don't have to accept it, but just give an invitation.
Would you like to go the bid route as opposed to the proposal route? In other words, the proposal route would give you the ability to look, consider the strengths of the person who's giving you the proposal and allow you to possibly award the job to somebody, not just based on price. If we invite bids, we pretty well, I think, we need to honor a little bit there. That be your motion?
That'd be my motion.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Hinton that we issue an invitation for bids for a property casualty work comp insurance consultant.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Hockaday, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. Item number 8, consider possibly approve our TxDOT County Road Mileage Certification. 424 miles is the total county maintained road mileage. This is something that they calculate for us, and I've provided you with an opportunity to study any of those measurements that you wanted to. But we do need to confirm for TxDOT if we are in agreement with their calculation of 424 miles.
I'm going to approve the calculated miles from TxDOT.
Motion by Commissioner Hockaday to approve the county road mileage certification at 424.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hinton. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Item number 9, consider possibly approve a request by Elizabeth Flowers to designate Tyson County Sheriff's Office as a contingent beneficiary of an individual retirement account. We have a presentation from Ms. Flowers at our last special meeting on the 4th, and she sang the praises of our sheriff and his department, and would like to make this gesture to designate that office as a contingent beneficiary. Her children are the primary beneficiaries on this, and she would like to make this secondary beneficiary. And we just simply need to approve that for, to make this legal.
We have to approve that? I mean, anybody can leave anything to the sheriff's department, or if they want to, why do we have to approve?
Apparently, it was a requirement of whoever her company was. I don't know why, they just told her that they needed approval from the court. It does seem a bit ridiculous, I don't want to make a gift, I don't approve receiving my gift.
Judge, will I have to let some state law involved in that? If, I mean, they can leave to one of your precincts, if they wanted to, but to do that, you have to have permission of court to approve it. So I think there's actually some state law involved in that.
We should, has we got to check out the legal part of that? And we have to get on court about that, that's a, we got to buy into it, sir. I mean, I'm just curious, I don't know.
I have not checked it out, I'm grateful that she's willing to make this kind of,
The sheriff's school, I mean, they told us there, there are trainings that anybody can make a gift to us that they want. It just has to go through the commissioner's court.
Oh, yes, are you sure about that?
Yes, sir.
Well, again, the likelihood of this ever coming to pass is slim. She has three children, and they would all have to be, out of the picture for Titus County to ever receive this, this money. I have no idea what the size of the gift is, not important.
Now, and the other reason why is because I think for the bench court to be involved, there's no secrecy behind it. I mean, everybody in the public knows that. I think that's one reason why the law is like that, so that they can't just make, come up.
You know, it may come back to influence, like Commissioner Riddle's saying.
Right,
it's
right.
All about the law.
So it's out open and you have to approve it. So, I mean, anybody can leave, they can leave $1 million to help you with a road fund, but you just have to go through the commissioner's court.
I make a motion to approve her request.
Motion by Commissioner Henry. Second by Commissioner Fields, all in favor of approving this request by Ms. Flowers, say aye. Opposed? Aye. Item number 10, consider to possibly approve the purchase of a bulletproof vest and taser for Cleve Johnson's reserve deputy to be paid out of security fund. Johnson came to me with this request. As you know, he has now two deputies. The cost of this vest is going to be about $742, the low end of $675. That's for the vest. About $700 for a taser. It's also my understanding that in Chris Durant's office, only one, they share, his two deputies share a taser. They do each have a vest, but they do share the taser for when they're on duty, apparently. So they don't have, this will make a total of three for Constable Johnson's office himself, his two deputies, and he's asking to equip all three with vest and taser, whereas in Constable Durant's office, they go with three vests and two tasers. This could be paid for out of the security fund if you choose to equip, you know, or equip this deputy.
I don't think there's any money.
In the security fund, there's $96,000 in the security fund.
You spent $96,000?
Yes.
This is a stupid question, but why is, where does that money come from, security fund? We act like it's money from
It's fees collected in district court. It's from fees collected in district court.
That's the only thing you can spend for security.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so that is what it, that way, that's all those things you spend in court.
That's all we spend.
That's it.
it's security type stuff. Security can involve a lot of different things. We put a door in the other day in the judge's offices.
Cameras,
any type of security stuff. But it's a fee that's collected, I believe, from the people that are being prosecuted in court.
And one that I have not long ago, I don't know about that. That's a matter of security fund?
It was actually not an iPad. It was a used Samsung tablet at about a third of the cost. He did mix it to me by getting another one, and I told him it was unlikely that we would do another one. His request was to use it for in the training seminars that he went to be able to read the information given at the training seminars. All right, I need your wishes on this equipment that Constable Lee Johnson is asking for.
Make a motion to approve the rules for this session.
Motion by Commissioner Hinton, second by Commissioner Fields. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. All right, item number 11, consider possibly approved travel with seminars. I have two requests, both from Sheriff Ingram. One is to send Jose Santos, Corrections Officer, to Basic County Corrections Course in Kilgore. This will be going on from the 5th of May to the 20th of May. There's a $180 registration plus $30 test fee, $20 per day related to meals. Sheriff anticipates this training will cost $450 for Jose Santos. Second request is to send Michael Garcia, Zambia, Washington, Kansas leader, to Lieutenant Corporal Correction, that's a Lieutenant Corporal and Correction Officer, to send these three individuals to the 28th Annual Texas Jail Association Conference in Austin. This is optional training. It will be going on from May 12th through the 16th. $630 registration. Total cost of meals at 40 per day, $600. Again, this is for all three. And the total cost of hotel, motel, $1,380. That brings a grand total of $2,610 to be paid for by the SCAP grant. What all does that SCAP grant pay for?
Pretty much anything to deal with the little prisoners, so we can use that SCAP line. Any kind of equipment we need. Like we just bought a thermometer that you run across the forehead to hang up in the, you know, use my stuff like that.
The training, obviously. The training's okay.
Right, training, anything Joe related.
How much is that grant each year?
I can check.
Roughly. Ballpark value.
Carlton.
Well, is that state criminal alien assistance?
Yes.
There's $20,000 in there. I don't remember how much comes in every year.
It'd be different judges, different hands. I think it differs from year to year.
$2,610 requested to send these three to Austin for that week-long training. Those are the only two that I have.
Thank you, motion.
Motion by Commissioner Fields to approve travel seminar. Second by Commissioner Hinton. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Item number 12, approve oral and written reports of county officials. Cheryl is out today, by the way. Was her mother having surgery or?
She gave me her report, so I want to do those, present those to you when you're ready.
by Commissioner Minton for approval.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hoppstead. All in favor of approval of the treasurer's report, say aye. Item number 14, approved budget amendments.
There's just one, Judge. It's number 20, and it's just updating a little construction to the latest report that we've got.
Same adjustment that you make monthly when you get that invoice?
Yeah, monthly or how often I give it to me. In some months, I don't have it, and in some months, they do. My guess would be that that $68,000 is not on there, so next month, when they correct that, that'll be on next month's report.
All right, I have just one budget amendment relating to adjusting loop expenses to actuals.
Make a motion to approve budget amendment.
Motion by Commissioner Minton.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Hoppstead. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Item number 15, sign pay orders and approve payments.
Judge, before you do, a little different step this time, besides the report that y'all got that was prepared Wednesday, Friday afternoon. About 4 o'clock Friday, the district court, who was meeting Friday, I assume, Judge Ralston sent over some attorney bills to be paid. I would like to include these in there. I'll give them to you, and y'all can look them over. Otherwise, these people will have to wait 2 more weeks.
Is that all these?
These are just appointed attorneys approved by the district court. But they're in addition to the...
They're not in that.
Because that would be very difficult.
Total on these.
I didn't add them up. So we're going to do just a live check, but I thought it would be better to just run through court and do a live check with them. Because there's several different attorneys being paid in there.
About $3,900 worth of...
And y'all can all...
Court of attorney fees, or indigent defense attorney fees, on top of what you've already seen.
I'm not going to pay the bills and there, plus the one for business gifts.
And voted by Commissioner Hoppstead to pay what we have seen thus far, in addition to $3,900 payment late from the district judge's office.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Minton. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Item number 16, closing comments by judge and commissioners. Commissioner Will.
This program contingency, 5% on this change order.
That is a contingency money that they put in the original budget. I want to say originally it was $4 million, $5 million. Initially, when it was first worked up, we've used 1.8 of it for the bridge correction. And then there's still some left, and hopefully that money will still be there at the end of the project unused.
That page asking for more money, will that come out of there, or will that be on a change order, or what's going to be on
the change? Are you talking about today's request?
Their request, yeah.
The $68,000?
Today's request, $68,000 for the change
order. No, the page saying where the communication from you about to be out of money. They want to ask for more in the change order.
They have not brought a request to us yet.
They said they're going to do it on a change order. It won't be in this fund. But it would be.
No. Chris, we've got an expert here. What's typically a contingency fund used for? Is it always used? How is it used?
It's normally about 10% on all government contracts.
For unforeseen expenses. You make your best guess and you tack on 5%.
Right. And the way it's run on the federal side is they put the contingency in there because the federal funds have to be approved by the Congress. So they put a contingency fund in there so they don't have to go back to the Congress when they've got a change order. So it's usually 5 to 10%. It's in there. Half the time it makes it all the way to the end of the project, other times part of it gets spent for something that comes up. It's just a miscellaneous catch-all in case something is missed. It's usually in the 5 to 10% range.
But to answer your question now, if pay or any other change order comes up, they would move the money from contingency to the line item. So yes, they would be using that contingency money, and they have in the past.
Anything not previously budgeted that goes outside of the scope of that original budget.
Original budget, that's right. We've been fortunate that so far we've been under budget, and so we have not used all the contingency money. If it could have been that we could have used it all up plus.
Anything else? Commissioner Fields?
I wanted to mention our cleanup days that we'll be having will start next Wednesday, the 23rd, 24th, 25th, and 26th. We'll go through that Saturday. I think the city's cleanup day is the 26th. Is that correct? Okay. That coincides with the city, and just kind of let people know that people have been asking about it, so we'll start Wednesday, the 23rd, 24th, 25th, and 26th. I had a chance to go by and stop by the Texas Country Farm Supply out here. They personally wanted to meet with them in court. We're getting that road open. They said the first week, 10 days, they had about a 10% increase in their sales. And it really helped them out get that north road open. So I told them I would tell you all in court. And they wanted bankers to get it open. They understood about the construction and what was going on, but they did want to thank the court for going ahead and getting it open. It's helped their business and other people that have business out there. Also, I wanted to just kind of let you know what we're doing. We've got a class going on at the county extension office. It's dealing with operation of a maintainer. TxDOT is putting that on, and I asked him this morning about what does that cost TxDOT to do that. He said for every person that's there, it costs about $2,500. It was a lot more than I first thought. We have 9 people out there going to maintainer school. And TxDOT is putting this on at no cost to the county. In each precinct, sent 2 employees to go out there, and it's free of charge. And then they'll do class all day today. And then we're working on County Road 2040. And one day, each person that's in this class will be going out there, and they will be supervised and being taught. Some of them are operators, some of them are new operators. But anyway, it's a big savings, about $2,500. I think the city sent it forward. So you're looking at about $10,000 saved by the state putting this on, at no expense to the city. And then the county, we have 6 out there. So it's a money saver, and it's good for our employees to have it. They'll do one day full of class, and they'll do one day on site. Running and operating
the night. Yeah, that's all I have, Jess. Okay. Along with Luke, Jim Chambers with El Chico told me the other day, last week, that he had more business than he could handle. And so he was very glad to have the loop back open. It was like flipping on a light switch, is what he said. So that was good news. Also, up there at that northern end, and I can't remember if I told you all about this or not, I may have written you a memo, but as you recall, I discussed with you the situation where we had a median had been built on Highway 67 from the intersection there at 271 heading east towards McCoy's. And that extended past the northern driveway of the Shell station. And the owner of the Shell station came to visit me about a month ago and said, we can't leave the north end of our station, or our customers can't, and make a left turn to get quickly back to 271 and back on to Interstate 30. We're being forced to head east on 67, or to figure out a way to make a U-turn through the station and come back out the newly revised driveway there on 49 and 271. Well, I went to TxDOT, to our local office, and think you should be able to shorten that median. Well, according to our contractor and ETP, that wasn't exactly the way they understood it. They understood that that was a requirement, that median be there, that the plans were drawn that way, and they tried to talk them out of that to allow two-way traffic at that northern entrance, or northern exit and northern entrance. The cost was put together to see what it would take to fix that problem, and $75,000 was the cost to fix that. Of course, that would come out of our pocket. Well, I look back to Mr. Ratcliffe, our friend from TxDOT in Atlanta, explained the situation to him, and he said, let me look into this. He called me last week and said, we're going to take care of this at our expense. And I was very grateful for that. They've already started work on that. That median has been chipped out, and they're fixing that. That would have been a real burden for that Shell station owner to have all their traffic not be able to make a quick left turn there to head back out to the northwest and get back on Interstate 30. So I'm grateful to PTP and Williams Brothers for getting these quick bids. I'm especially grateful our Atlanta and local TxDOT office for seeing that problem and being willing to help us out, not only monetarily, but getting that work done quickly.
Want to take a look at your situation? The trucks going across the island?
You know, they sure didn't want to go all the way down to the next exit. They want to get back there. The next time, they're going to say, forget that Shell station, I'll stop somewhere else. And we could have seen our Shell station, you know, suffer tremendously, more than they've already suffered. I've got an opportunity this Friday with the help of Tex 21, the organization that we've been a member of for about 3 years. We have the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, Anthony Fox, who's coming to the city of Garland for a conference concerning the ongoing Interstate Highway 635 East project. There are two points in bringing this to your attention. If you thought LBJ Freeway was bad between Central and the toll road, get ready, because they're getting ready to do a major overhaul between Interstate 30 all the way to Central Expressway. So I sent an email to my son. He said, well, I'm going to change my plans to move anywhere to that area. I'm going to stay on George Bush. But that will be a big announcement, I think. I don't know how public they've made this. None of the folks that I knew in Dallas were aware of this. But anyway, Secretary of Transportation, U.S. Secretary Anthony Fox will be there. Tex 21 will get us some time with Mr. Fox to discuss Interstate 30 and the I-30 corridor. So that's one of the perks we get for being part of Tex 21. I will attend that Friday morning at 10 o'clock in the city of Garland, again, that chance to meet with Secretary Fox. For commissioners' interest and those of you in the audience that may not be aware of this, on May 9th, our college, the NTCC, is hosting a live webcast. I believe this will be in their big auditorium there. This is a leadership course, and we've got some great speakers there. Laura Bush, Phil McDermott, Andy Stanley, Malcolm McDowell, Desmond Tutu. Lots of good speakers. I think this will be about a 7-hour day when you'll get to hear from folks that are considered to be experts in the field of leadership. It will be a great opportunity. If you have a Friday available to give that, you can inquire at NTCC if you would like to know more about the Experience Leader Cast Live. Again, May the 9th. That's all I have.
The only thing I had to say is that I had some surplus equipment that I would like to put on auction. I just want to make the court aware of it. And I was going to get an auction started.
What are you going to be selling?
I have an old tire ditching machine and a side cutting mower, and then I have another four-wheel drive that I've had for years. And
Anybody else think that stuff? Anything else? Commissioner Humphrey?
The only thing I've got to do is, we've got 3140 Tolles, County Road 3140, down next to the interstate. It's one of the roads I had on the deal with the, of the grant. I was trying to hold off, and we got that grant money, but I, road started caving off around the tank, so we had to put some tank in. We got it in, it came from the home, railroad, we got it Wednesday. It's 48 inches long, and it's 10 foot diameter.
What kind of tank is this?
It's an open railroad. Like the whole petroleum products in, like on the cemetery, the whole petroleum products in.
And what is it used for?
What we use it for? We use it instead of putting the bridge in.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about liquid storage. You use it as a...
It's a culvert. And we dug one out, it had rusted out all the way across the 109 road, where it had rusted out, the water was coming through, and the road cap caved in. We've been patching it, trying to keep it together to make this grant.
So you remove the old rusty shell, and you put in a new one, another surplus use?
We couldn't do all that, because we put poor concrete, we had to get Dennis Cameron, and he had, he's put in for us, because we're heading in. Dennis got the big track hole, and he dug all the creek out, had to dig it out, because this mirror didn't work until now. We had water running through it right here, and we should have hauled it in, packed it in. And that's all I'm doing, that's on 3140, northeast 34.
All right, thank you. All right, that's all. I'm going to entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Commissioner Hens, second by Commissioner Pearson. All the papers say aye.
Hey, Tim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, don't you want anything with that?
Yeah, let me give you a call when I have a chance. Let me read it, actually. I was short-handed on Friday. Hey, Mike. Hey, was that Chris Ayler who gave me a report on the dam Monday?
Yeah.
Okay. He's the guy that usually reports to KSA, but I want to make sure. Okay. I still have to think about what I want to write about it, yeah. The first thing that popped in my head was, engineer says dam break.